morning and welcome to Sunday Sequence with me, Patrick Spate. How long can Ireland, North and South, continue to export its abortion problem to England? And will the words, as far as is practical, in Dublin's constitutional ban on abortion, let the lawyers off the hook and allow a girl of 14 to go to Great Britain for an abortion? The Council of Churches for Britain and Ireland, which was formed in September 1990 to provide a meeting place for churches in England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, has its first full assembly tomorrow in Derbyshire. The four-day assembly expects over 300 participants from 30 member churches and organisations. The Church of Ireland representative is Bishop John Neal of Tuam. So what are his expectations?
My expectations of the assembly are that we will begin to discover what it is for the churches to actually involve themselves in working together rather than depending on an organisation like the old British Council of Churches, which undertook work in the name of the churches. This is now an attempt to try to get us actually working together, sharing resources, understanding what each other is already doing, and try to draw on the expertise of the different denominations.
So how are you actually going to discover whether you can work together?
Well, now, over the last 2 years, there's been a great growing together. A lot of this has been administrative, but we've actually had to look at some very special areas. The areas we've been looking at have been mission, where we must pull more together. We've been looking at interfaith relationships, which are very important in mainland Britain at the moment, with such a mixed ethnic community. And also at the whole question of racial relations and the relation of the black-led churches to the established churches and some of the newer churches also. This has been a very important area which the Council of Churches for Britain and Ireland has been involved in. Many people have been drawn into house groups, into some of these new churches, restoration churches, and we are very anxious that these are not forgotten in the ecumenical movement. For instance, these are bigger now than the Methodist Church in Britain.
But those issues seem to be predominantly UK-based. What impact is it going to have on the situation in the north of Ireland, for example?
One of the items which we are being asked to look at very seriously is the sort of contribution that Christians across these islands can make in the context of the troubles in Northern Ireland. We also are concerned about the wider European dimension. This is something that we perhaps talk about a little bit more in Ireland than people do in Britain, and it's been very important that the Irish voice has several times had to say, look, Britain is not just an island, it's part of Europe. And that's something that I think that the Irish delegates in the Church Representatives meeting have been able to contribute.
One of the features of the Assembly will be a debate on Christian unity.
Yes.
Now, given the cold reception the Vatican gave to the Arctic document last year, and the fact that you don't have representatives from the Presbyterian Church of Ireland at the Council, it's not going to be a very fruitful debate, is it?
Well, now, from an Irish point of view, the Methodists and the Church of Ireland are the only full members. The Roman Catholics are there as observers, but of course the Presbyterian voice from Scotland and England and Wales is a very key part of the Assembly, so that I think that this will have its effect within Presbyterianism in Ireland as well. But quite apart from that, the debate about the future of the churches, yes, there is one whole session given over to what our expectations are of unity. I think that what I've been hearing coming through many of the discussions at the Council of Churches has been the fact that progress has been made on the local level. And this is something that I think we can identify with in Ireland, and I believe especially in Northern Ireland, where great progress has been made between Christians at the local level, not always in very public ways or very spectacular ways, but Christians coming together to discuss community issues, to pray together, to study together. And that's something that I see as a very important contribution and way forward for the churches in these islands.
Now, I gather that the Assembly is not actually going to work to a set agenda. You're going to have fairly open discussions. So, as a representative of the Church of Ireland, what issues will you be raising?
I think, for instance, one issue that I will be attending a workshop involved with is the issue of interchurch marriages. This is something that has been very close to my thoughts and prayers over the last year or two. I think we will also be talking about mission. I think that's something that is very important. There's a great, shall we say, questioning going on of the whole decade of evangelism in the British context at the moment, and I think this is something rather dear to Irish Christians, that we are in fact trying to put evangelism very high on our list of priorities, evangelism, the renewal of the churches, and that's something that I think we'll want to make sure that there's no failure of nerve over. I'll be very conscious, though, not just being an Irish representative. Over the last couple of years, as one of the presidents of the Council of Churches, I've had the privilege of being involved in all sorts of things that hadn't got an immediate Irish dimension, and I think that this is good for us. We can become very insular in these islands, and I've been made very conscious of some of the wider issues. We'll be looking at world issues. We have a very big contribution from the African churches who are actually coming and saying, look, you're working together in England and in Ireland. What are you doing for us? How can we help you? How can you remain in partnership with us? There have been tremendous links between African and European Christians in the past, and these need to be explored and developed somewhat.
Bishop John Neill, long before Sunday sequence was thought of, a man called Jack Withers was broadcasting about religion on BBC Radio in Northern Ireland. A former moderator of the Presbyterian General Assembly, Dr. Withers died on Friday at the age of 80. With a tribute to him, here's the Reverend David Lapsley from Fisherwick Church in Belfast.
Jack Withers was one of those sturdy Ulster men who believed in excellence and pursued it. But he never made the mistake of making excellence an end in itself. He simply had a zest for life and wanted to use all his gifts and abilities in whatever he was doing. In fact, he chose to be a minister of the Presbyterian Church, going first for a short spell to London and then for a few years to Port Stewart. His major work, however, was done in the Fisherwick congregation, where he served for 26 years from 1946 until his retirement in 1972. There he drew large congregations at a time when crowds still flocked to hear the preachers of the day. He was the thinking person's evangelical, attracting all kinds of people, some of them without much faith or sitting on the fringes of church life. He was not a man to shirk from less popular comments. I once heard him defend Christian sexual morality against the background of the swinging 60s with scathing incisiveness. Yet he always presented his case with wonderful attractiveness. There was an elegance about his style, which no doubt derived from his classical education. His use of English was correct, but throbbed with life and vivid imagery. His sermons were relevant to ordinary people's lives and problems, remarkably free of cant and clichés. Inevitably, he attracted critics, especially among the conservative-minded, who liked their preaching parcelled out in time-honoured phrases. It's not surprising that he became an outstanding religious broadcaster. He saw the time coming when radio and television would have major effects, not only on church attendance, but also on the way in which people learned, listened and perceived. So he began to prepare the way. His conversational style and natural manner lent themselves to the airwaves and the camera. His exact use of language communicated very directly to a generation already growing weary of complacent, conventional religious watchwords. One example of Jack Withers' skill as a broadcaster was a series of addresses aimed at young people and students with intellectual and moral problems. They evoked as many as 500 letters a week in response and were published as a most successful booklet under the title Help Thou My Unbelief. The total life of the community was of first importance to this preacher and broadcaster. His spoken messages would have been ineffective in his eyes if they did not contribute to the well-being of the land. He himself served on many church and public bodies, including school and charity boards, and he was a leading member of the Order of St. John. But most of all, Jack Withers worked for the peace of this island. He had enough confidence in his own faith not to feel threatened by others. He was secure enough in his own Presbyterian tradition to be able to have dialogue with others. His personal friendships were not bound by creed or denomination. All of this led him in January 1964 to invite his friend Father Hugh Murphy to speak to the Fisherwick Youth Club about the work of the Second Vatican Council. News leaked out, and a so-called monster demonstration was planned by predictable factions of militant Protestantism. Because street clashes were a distinct possibility, the proposed meeting was cancelled. Jack Withers' sermon the next Sunday contained the following telling sentence: "In my simple love of my brother man, and my burning desire to promote goodwill in our community, I have unwittingly uncovered a seething world of fear and animosity." That seething world of fear and animosity bullied the Withers family for months, and later, when Jack became moderator of the General Assembly in 1968, continued to dog his footsteps. The mobs had been introduced to the streets of Belfast. History will no doubt apportion its considered blame. It is, however, ironic that this eminently civilized man should have been the innocent trigger of such ugly and destructive energies. I followed him into Fisherwick as his successor. I follow in the tradition of evangelical, open-minded, ecumenical Presbyterianism which he espoused. And I am grateful that we can build on his good and godly foundations.
The Reverend David Lapsley. The time now is nearly 23 minutes past nine. Now, the reopened abortion row in the Republic, centering on the plight of a girl of 14, denied permission under the Constitution to go to Great Britain for an abortion. Her appeal against that opens tomorrow in the Supreme Court. Nuala McKeever's been in Dublin asking people for their views, and apart from some men and a trio of nuns who wouldn't talk to her, she found a unanimous voice from women in favour of the girl having an abortion.
I'd vote for abortion. The same in this country, as my husband said, the country is backwards. Now divorce, now abortion, nothing in this country. I know it's taking the life, but at the same time, why ruin? They're only kids themselves. You know, they're only 12, 13-year-olds themselves, so, I mean, why ruin their lives?
I think it should be, like, it's up to every individual themselves. It should be there, and if anyone wants to get it done, well and good, let them. It's just your own beliefs yourself. But definitely, if it had to be my child, I would have just brought her straight to England. I'd say, well, that's it. I would have caused injunctions. I'd have faced the consequences. That'd have been that.
The president, like, she said a few words to him today yesterday. I don't know whether she was meant to say them or not, but I think she was speaking as a woman, and maybe she's not really meant to do that. You know, it's a voice of her own opinion, that's honest, but she kind of, I think, felt a bit fed up with the way all the men were getting their say, you know, that the women weren't allowed at all. The way they were put out and that, and said, like, they weren't allowed to speak at all. I think that was one wrong thing about it. I mean, they have more to say than what any of the men would. They didn't get a chance to speak at all.
I think that we had heard so much about 1992 and the breaking down of barriers, and that we would all be one big community. And I think it's very sad for Irish women to think that literally now there's this big, as Martin Turner's caption of the Irish Times showed, this big barrier around Ireland, and that women are not allowed to travel freely, or this particular girl is not allowed to travel outside the country because they're afraid she'll get an abortion.
What do you think then about the coverage in the world's press? They're saying that Ireland is barbarous and misogynist.
Yeah, well, I would agree. I would totally agree with them. There was a big uproar here in Ireland when the whole Ceausescu issue was known, and I think this is just something along the same lines.
In what way do you mean?
I mean that this, our, because of our constitution, because of the Eighth Amendment, that the unborn child here has as much of a right. In fact, this unborn child has more of a right than the mother. The state has said, well, to hell with her mental state, to hell with the effect that this is going to have on this child. She must have this child, so as long as she can carry herself around, bear this child to full term, the state seemed to be happy under the constitution as the way it stands. I don't think that the constitution needed to be amended. And I don't think that women, maybe, I don't know whether I agree with abortion coming into Ireland as just getting it willy-nilly, but I certainly don't see that people should be stopped from travelling abroad or within the European community, which is their right, and obtaining a service, which abortion is, in another community.
Well, do you think that there's a change in mood in Ireland, a change in awareness of the need to change these laws?
Definitely. I'd say people that would never have voted for abortion before will take definitely a good second look at what they voted for.
I think the Catholic Church has an awful lot to answer for as well, and that an awful lot of people are such staunch Catholics still that really no matter what their conscience tells them, their religious beliefs will, what the Church tells them will overpower it, and they're afraid to deviate from the Church in any way.
Well, do you think that if you are a Catholic you can afford to use your own conscience, or do you have to go by what the Church says?
I think you have to use your own conscience. This is 1992, we're not in the dark ages anymore. Mrs. Brenda Bonner's quoted in the Irish Times this morning as saying, you know, if this girl had a choice, she could keep her baby and she would have all the help and sympathy. I mean, sympathy is not much good nowadays. People maybe a century ago would accept sympathy, but nowadays people want to have precision left to themselves as to what they do with their bodies or what they do with their minds. It's up to a girl. Well, not in this case, but you have a choice whether you have sex or not, and therefore if you are pregnant as a result of this, it's your choice as to whether you want to keep the baby or not.
I don't see that anybody should be able to get an abortion just because they had a good one-night fling or a weekend fling and they're pregnant. I don't agree with that, but I think that to put a child through the trauma of a rape, which it is, and then to put it through the trauma of childbirth, which is terrible. It's brilliant if you want the baby. At the end of it, when they give you your baby, it's great. You forget about it. You certainly wouldn't forget about it if you were raped at the age of 14.
Is there a sense that the whole debate is being swamped into whether you're pro-abortion or anti-abortion, and that the idea that there's a... the essence of the debate should be whether there's a choice is being lost?
No, I don't know. I think definitely now people, before in 1983 it was pro and anti-abortion, whereas now there's a human face put on this. We're talking about a 14-year-old girl, and everybody, people are thinking if they have daughters, how would they react? Whereas now people are definitely thinking, well, there should be a choice. And I've heard people saying, if that was my daughter, I would want her to have an abortion.
The biggest shame is the fact that she asked. That she seeked approval. She'd never asked for it. She could have gone out to England, had her abortion. Okay, she mightn't have got the rapist charged because she might have had, the police wouldn't have had let her use the evidence or whatever. But in the morning, if it's happened again, you'll find people won't report it. They bring their daughters over, have this done, and no scandal, no tragedy for the, well, the tragedy to the family, yes, but no scandal, no publicity. Nobody else gets involved.
People are even commenting on the fact that President Robinson made reference to it the other night. This is more of brush it under the carpet. As long as the President, who is well known for her views in Irish society, as long as she doesn't say anything about it, then the rest of us mightn't start thinking about it. And again, it's this thing, just let these girls get the boat to England. You know, it's not our problem. As long as we don't know about it,
that's
all right.
They don't care once. They don't do it in the street, frighten the horses. Doesn't matter. You can go off to England for your long weekend and come back, and nobody's going to say anything to you.
chieftain's rendition of the Women of Ireland, ending that report by Nuala McKeever. Today's morning service is also being broadcast on Radio 4, and that's why it's coming up next. I'll be back with the rest of Sunday Sequence at 10:15, when one point of view on the abortion row expressed by a doctor is that Ireland needs to sort out its sex education rather than export an abortion problem to Great Britain. Now at just after 9:30, morning service today is from St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, Rosetta, Belfast. The service is conducted by the Reverend Alistair Kennedy. Was from St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, Rosetta, Belfast. The service was conducted by the Reverend Alistair Kennedy. The organist was Robert Scott, and the choir mistress, Jeanette Scott, and it was also broadcast on Radio 4. The time now is 16 minutes past 10. I'm Patrick Spate, and this is Sunday Sequence. Coming up in the next hour, what's the real problem in Ireland, north and south? The lack of abortion or inadequate sex education? Tomorrow and Tuesday, the Republic's Supreme Court hears the appeal by a girl of 14 against the constitutional ban stopping her from getting an abortion in Great Britain. I'll be discussing some of the issues surrounding the case shortly. But first, a view from Dr. Martin Lupton of University College Hospital London, who's been telling me his experience of some of the women who take the abortion trail from Ireland.
It's an experience which has brought me great sadness, and indeed one which brought me so sadness I was moved to write about it in a newspaper article in Ireland. It's one of meeting women who've been deeply hurt and I think end up being deeply damaged by pregnancy and then their decision how to deal with that, with their pregnancy. I see a lot of women who come to casualty having miscarried, and the proportion of those are young Irish girls who have come to England for a termination. And the Irish girls have got a very strong mixture of emotion. They're usually very ashamed, they're usually alone, they're usually quite confused about things, they're not really clear in their own minds why they made the decision to come to the United Kingdom. They're usually very afraid, and it's very sad to meet them.
Are they generally under the age of 20?
The majority are between 17 and about 25. Though I have seen women up to the age of 45. In fact, the 45-year-old woman I saw was a case in point. She was a 45-year-old woman who was having difficulties with her husband, was heading towards a separation, and had sex with him relatively recently, unprotected, and become pregnant. And the whole idea of having a child at that time in her life was obviously more than she could bear. She didn't feel she had anyone to turn to. She didn't think anyone in her family would understand. And curiously, she'd never started on any form of contraception because her local doctor, who was a practicing Roman Catholic, she felt would be very insensitive to her needs. So she came over to England to arrange for a termination. And the night before she went to the Pregnancy Advisory Service, she got herself into such a state that she went out to have a drink, and she had a few too many. And after she'd drunk for a while on her own, she became terribly depressed, and she went and bought a whole bottle of paracetamol tablets and tried to kill herself, which is how we got hold of her, and that she was brought in having overdosed and having been found with an empty bottle of tablets in her bed and breakfast nearby where we were working. And we sorted her out as far as her suicide attempt had gone, and she went her way, and I don't know what happened after that.
So do you feel that if abortion were legal in the Republic of Ireland, women like the one you've just spoken about wouldn't have to go through such mental trauma?
Well, I don't... You see, I don't personally believe the issue is simply the availability of abortion. Abortion is very traumatic, even for those people who believe it not to be morally wrong. It's not something any woman would go through lightly, and no cause for celebration for anybody. I mean, the issue is the fact that so many people become pregnant when they don't want to be. And I think that's really where one should be tackling the problem. If 5,000 girls now come to the United Kingdom every year for a termination, the only difference between changing the legislation in Ireland and the present state now is that they would have their terminations in Ireland rather than in the UK. Now, that's not exactly a solution of the problem. That's simply a shifting of where it's done. And the issue is really a question of sex education and of the availability and acceptability of contraception and of the milieu in which women find themselves, which at the present time force them to seek solutions like termination as soon as they discover themselves to be pregnant. It's not simply the individual's fault, it is the fault of the society in which they live.
So what do these women's experience tell you about the level of sex education in the Republic of Ireland?
Well, the majority of women I've seen came from outside of the cities, and it must be said that their understanding of what was happening was very poor. They appreciated that contraception would have been a good thing, but they were on the whole very unhappy to avail themselves of it, because the only way they could buy it was either through a chemist. There was always the anxiety that the chemist would know who they were, and therefore their, as it were, secret would be out. And often they hadn't planned the sexual event, and because there was one could only get contraception at certain places and at certain times, and because there was already an anxiety about getting it, they'd simply sort of dismissed it from their minds, and then had sex, and then become pregnant, and then, of course, another kettle of fish altogether. If you look at the statistics throughout Europe on abortion and contraception, you will see that those countries which provide contraception most freely are not necessarily the ones that have the lowest level of abortion. It is those that introduce sex education at a very early stage in that educational process where the responsibility of sex is very openly discussed from a very early stage, that abortion is very much less, because people behave, as it were, in a knee-jerk way more responsibly. Whereas in England, and it appears in Southern Ireland, they don't behave as responsibly as they should, and we therefore have this terrible problem, which is then solved, as it were, by our society through abortion.
Now, you have dealt with a lot of young women who have started to miscarry or run into other complications with their pregnancy, not only in Britain, but in Panama. What was so special about the young Irish girl that you had to help in the London hospital that you were working in, which moved you to write the article in the Irish Times?
The thing that really upset me was the degree of sadness and misery of these girls. It struck me as an appalling indictment of the society, which is so steeped in Christian teaching, that such a large number of women should, in such a dreadful emotional state, seek something on their own and unsupported, which is for anyone a dreadful experience, i.e. an abortion, in a foreign land and in secret. And I felt that there was a degree of burying the head in the sand on the part of Irish society, in that I don't believe that the legislation they have at the moment would be so easy to enforce if England was 2,000 miles away from Ireland. The fact is that they have legislation, they have taken a moral standpoint in their attitude towards termination, but they have abrogated much of the responsibility in that it is very simple for an Irish girl, and well over 4,000 do every year, to come over to the United Kingdom for an abortion. And I felt that the people of Ireland must see that we are providing a service to extremely damaged people in the United Kingdom, and that the problem is there. It's in England, but it's, it should be in Ireland, and then perhaps they would concentrate on ways of preventing it.
Having an abortion is indeed a very traumatic affair, really. Mm. But is it all the more complicated for the woman if she feels that she's being tormented by her conscience?
I don't think complicated is really the word. I think that if you believe that life begins at conception, which it happens to be what I do, having an abortion, I think what happens is that one is thrown into a complete panic about being pregnant, and you think to yourself, what am I going to do? My father or my family will kill me or reject me if they discover I'm pregnant, because that seems to be what most of them believe. Society as a whole is not going to help me very much. In fact, you know, all the gossips are going to gossip about me, and life will be miserable. What on earth am I to do? So they're pregnant, they don't know what to do, so they think, I will have an abortion. It's quick. I will think about the moral consequences afterwards. So they flee to the United Kingdom. They have 2 or 3 days in the UK. They have the briefest of counselling sessions. They have a termination. They go back to Ireland. And then, when it's all over, it's only they are left with this sense of responsibility. And if you believe that life begins at conception, it must be the most awful thing to contemplate after you've done it, had an abortion. But you see, I don't think it's your fault specifically. I think it's the fault of the society you came from, in that when you became pregnant, you were not cared for and you weren't sensitively dealt with. You were almost driven into panic and you know, the last resort, which I think most people would rather not take.
Now, as you pointed out, a lot of these young women do travel to Britain alone.
Yes.
Because they usually can't afford to travel with their boyfriends or their partners.
Yeah.
How do they cope with the stress and the loneliness? And because it must be extremely difficult, where do they get emotional support from if the counselling at the clinics is very limited?
Well, I think the counselling is very good, it must be said. But through pressure of time, because the pressures on the services in the UK are immense, it's very short. And frankly, I don't think they get any support other than that. There are various organisations for girls in situations that they may find themselves, but I'm not sure that they're really aware of it. As far as I could see, the girls that we saw, they simply put up with it. Women through the centuries have put up with the most appalling things without support, and I suppose this is just another manifestation of it.
Dr. Martin Lupton of University College Hospital, London. To discuss the issues raised by the Republic's constitutional ban on abortion, we have in our Dublin studio Father Brian McKevitt, who runs a counselling agency called Women Hurt by Abortion. And here in the studio, Inez McCormick, trade union organiser for NUPI, and Simon Lee, Professor of Jurisprudence at Queen's University, Belfast. If I could come to you first, Father Brian McKevitt, could you give me your personal assessment of a week which has been described as the most traumatic in the Republic's recent history?
Well, I think a lot of it has been hyped up no end by the media, and by pro-abortion groups that are using this particular incident to try and campaign for abortion here in the country. Thousands of Irish women have both from both north and south of the border have been badly abused, and their lives have been devastated by abortions over a number of years, and that has been completely ignored by the politicians and the media and the women's groups and trade unions and so on. And so this particular incident, it seems to me that the way it is being treated is just, to a large extent, it's an attempt by pro-abortion groups to promote abortion in this country.
Inez McCormick, would you share that assessment?
I suppose I'm looking not so much at the traumatic week in the life of a state, but in the life of a child. A child who's been impregnated and penetrated by a male adult and had sperm implanted. A child who can no longer be a child because either she has an abortion or she has a pregnancy. Her childhood is over. Society in which she lives hasn't protected her. It has now turned the full weight of its police force, its judiciary, its courts upon her. The man who penetrated her has not yet been charged. To that child, what is it to be a citizen of Ireland, or for her parents to be a citizen of Ireland? According to the law of the church of which she is a member, according to the law of the country in which she lives, if she has the abortion, she is a murderess. What is it to be a 14-year-old girl and be a citizen of Ireland? That's not a position of women who are pro or against abortion. It is a question of what is it in a society that can produce an attack upon a 14-year-old by the full weight of the state and can leave a rapist sitting in the place where he lives and the parents having to move house? What is it that makes us forget another case not many years ago where a 14-year-old died in a grotto in the west of Ireland giving birth to a child? The society in which she lives wouldn't acknowledge the fact that she was pregnant. She was nearly 8 months full term and wore a coat in class. What is it in the society that allows those children, those young women, to flee to London because we will not acknowledge their sexuality? And as a woman in Ireland, what I want acknowledged is my sexuality, my right to control that sexuality, and my right to make adult decisions. Because we don't treat women as adults, what we're forcing, and we treat them as children in relation to their rights, what we're now forcing is this child to be a woman long before she should be.
I'll come to Simon Lee in a moment, but if I could get a response from you, Brian McKevitt. I suppose what angers a lot of women about the church's attitude to abortion is that it seems to draw some kind of moral equivalence between abortion and murder. And I believe from reading of church canon law that if a woman in Ireland or throughout the Catholic world has an abortion, she is automatically excommunicated. That canon law does not seem to address murderers in the same sense.
Well, I think that if we recognise that it is a child from the moment of conception, that this woman is carrying her own child, then we have to recognise that the woman, that proper care for a woman, particularly for a woman who has been raped, that proper care for her would mean trying to help her to recover from the rape and trying to help her to protect her child. But that to subject her to the further violence of an abortion, to the further trauma of both physical and psychological of an abortion, is just to add to the abuse of the woman, to add to the violence against the woman. Because abortion, you must remember, is an extreme form of the sexual abuse of women. It's a physical and an emotional violence against women. And to add to what the young girl or any woman is going through with a crisis pregnancy by putting her through an abortion, that only prevents her getting healing from the rape. It becomes an obstruction to recovery from the rape.
But should the church be drawing this strong moral equivalence between abortion and murder? It seems extremely emotive language to use,
well,
especially
where
against women who might be suffering a tremendous trauma. They don't have abortions lightly.
Yeah, nobody has, that I'm aware of, nobody in authority has described abortion as murder, because technically speaking it is not murder. It's the killing of an unborn child, but that is something different to what we call murder. As well as that, murder also takes into account the intention of the person and the state of being of the person at that particular time. So I think Inez is being a bit dramatic by using those kind of terms. And it's also only adding to the distress, perhaps, of women who are listening by using these kind of emotive terms. Women who perhaps have lost a child through abortion, by using these emotive terms, we're only adding to the distress of those people.
I would absolutely agree with Father McKevitt. It adds to distress. Certainly, as someone who spoke in the abortion referendum campaigns in the South in 83, I was called supporter of murder by the family solidarity groups, the pro-life groups, and also, may I finish, in terms of the statements made this week, those statements have been made. What I am saying is that a burden has been put, this is not a woman having a child, this is a child being made to have a child. The burden being put on her is that she is going to kill. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that is a trauma that is not worthy of recognition in a civilised society.
I don't know how you could have been called a murderer by Family Solidarity at the time of the amendment, because Family Solidarity didn't even exist at that time. However, the other more important point, nobody is asking what putting... This child is already a mother. Since from the time that she conceived her child, she is a mother. And proper care for a mother is to help her to grow in the love and protection of her child. However the child was conceived, and we admit in this case that it was a very traumatic experience, well, what I'm saying is to put her through the further violence of an abortion is only going to damage her further and to leave her with a legacy that she's going to have to live with and cope with for the rest of her life.
And what I'm saying, Father McKevitt, that is not your right to make that decision, nor mine. It is that child and her parents, together with professional counselling, which includes the right to all options. I'm also a mother.
Well, let me bring in Simon Lee here. Simon, do you feel that the state in the Republic of Ireland has reneged on its responsibility to this young girl?
Well, the state is a very broad term within the state. I think the legal system has certainly not acted in a way one might have hoped. The Attorney General is part of the state in the broadest sense, the judge another part of the state, independent actors. But there is this sense that perhaps the Attorney General had a discretion which he didn't exercise. There is a sense that the judge interpreted the Constitution in a particular way when perhaps he didn't have to, and I think that the Supreme Court were at the very least to modify the injunction if not lifted. If you want to talk about the broader point, I think that the biggest mistake from the legal point of view that the Republic of Ireland has made is in believing that the amendment would solve the problems. And indeed this comes through very strongly in the judgment, the very first ground, which is probably the least impressive ground of the girl's case, has a point for us here today, which is they were saying, how could the judge interpret this broad amendment without any specific guidance from the Doyle? And although the judge said what he had to, I think he accepted that it was a kind of failure on the part of Irish society to spell out the detail. And we've seen that failure in other parts of the world, in the United States and in Canada. The idea that a simple phrase will solve abortion problems is just unrealistic.
But does it make good legal sense for a constitution to enshrine the moral view of the majority of the population?
Firstly, it's by no means clear what the majority think on this particular issue. As to whether the law should prevent a girl who's been raped from seeking an abortion outside the jurisdiction or indeed having an abortion within the jurisdiction. But let's suppose that you take the majority to feel that she shouldn't be allowed to do that. I think that the hesitation a lot of people feel, however much pro-life they might be about this case, is a sense that there are different rights conflicting here, and there is a limit to what the law should appropriately do, that at the end of the day, as Inez was saying, many people might feel, although they hope that the girl and her parents come to a decision which is pro-life, they think that it's inappropriate for the law to force her to the opposite conclusion, especially in the kind of under cloak and dagger way in which Irish society tries to deal with this abortion problem by having at one sense the option in England and at one sense not.
Father Brian McKevitt, do you feel it's right for a constitution to enshrine the Catholic ethos in its amendments? I mean, from my reading of the Second Vatican Council, one's conscience takes precedence over Catholic dogma. This constitution doesn't allow people to make a choice between good and evil, as it were.
This constitution simply recognises that the unborn has a right to life. That's all that it's saying, and that as far as practicable, with respect to, for the right to life of the mother, that right to life should be vindicated. That is simply a statement of what we as a society want. But I want to go back to something that Inez said about women's rights. And I would be much more impressed by people's concern for women's rights, if there was more demand from these people campaigning for the rights of women for proper information about the physical and the psychological damage that abortion is doing to women, that many of the women are being left sterile.
Yes, is that over to me? Over to you.
Nervous breakdowns, that there, many of the women are being left with a fear of intimacy, that there causes damage or difficulties in their marriages, and that particularly for a young teenager having an abortion, that there are particular physical risks. Now, if there was a real campaign in our country to make those that damage known, then I could understand people saying, well, women have a right to know. But since all of this has been covered over, also Dr. Lupton mentioned the counselling at the clinics. The people who are providing the counselling at the abortion clinics in England are actually employees of the abortion clinics. And so the, if you like, the bread and butter of the abortion clinics, in fact it's the cake of the abortion clinics really, is the fact that there is a steady stream of girls and women being sent from both Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland into these clinics to have their children aborted. If there was an attempt to expose all of this ugly side of abortion, as well as what it's doing to the women, then one might be give more credibility to these claims about women's rights and so on.
And yes, there is an ugly side to abortion, and I'm sure there are a lot of women who, when they do have an abortion, are psychologically traumatised by it. So do you feel that perhaps the abortion clinics are not providing sufficient information about the pros and cons?
If you'll pardon me, I'm not going to answer the question in a man's terms. I don't think a woman's rights start on the question of the trauma of abortion. I think the woman's rights starts when it's a question of control over her body. The access to information to have the right to have contraception, the access to sexual education, the provision within a society that virtually drowns the issue of sexual abuse. If we had the same attention to the issue of sexual abuse within Ireland, of children and young women, as we have to the attention to this case in terms of resources, then it would be an indication of a society which didn't regard young women and young girls as something to be used, but something to be protected and someone with rights. I suppose when I look after over the past 20 years, I look at the track record of women, not just like me, who have fought not just for the issue of women's rights, but women's responsibilities. The right to have a decision over your own body, the right to have the responsibility over your own body. Because rights do go with responsibilities. When I look at women who work in rape crisis, when I look at women who work in sexual abuse units, when I look at the pitiful resources they have, when I look at the lack of sex education in this country, when I look at the trauma over the decisions and debate in the north about the provision of the Brook Clinic, which has talked about provision of information to young teenagers about sexual education, then I question, what are we talking about? We're not talking about a society which is interested in women's rights or children's rights. We're talking the society which is denying a discussion and debate over the issue of sexuality, which is based on rights rather than control. And I suppose in answer to the issue of abortion, yes, abortion is a traumatic experience for any woman. No woman goes into it lightly. But no woman is going to allow any longer in Ireland that decision about whether she shall have that trauma or another trauma to be decided by the church and the state. It is her decision. She is not incapable of making it. She does not have the right to make it.
Simon, to go back to the idea that I was trying to suggest earlier, that there are many detailed questions any legal system has to face with abortion, I'd say there are essentially four. The first is, who should decide? Now, Ines has talked of the woman, but in practice, in English law, it's the woman and two doctors who have to decide.
Yes.
And in this particular case, where the 14-year-old girl, I suspect, traumatised, will not be able to decide for herself, might also be the parents. The second issue is, on what grounds should any legal system allow abortion? Now, in Northern Ireland, this 14-year-old girl would be able lawfully to have an abortion on these grounds. In England, she'd be able to have an abortion on much wider grounds. In the Republic of Ireland, we're about to find out with the Supreme Court ruling. A third question is, for how long should an abortion be allowed? That's where a lot of the attention has always been in England. Is it 24 weeks or 18 weeks or whatever? Which seems to me to be the least important of these questions. And the fourth issue is one which Father Brian was perhaps in a way raising, which is, on the basis of what information, what kind of counselling should the woman get before she takes this awesome decision? I think it's fair to say it is a tragic choice for anybody in this situation, not one which would be entered lightly. Now, one of the problems of a society trying to dodge all these questions is that I think it catches up with it in this kind of case. That is to say, that Irish women going across to England don't get perhaps the same amount of time to reflect and the same kind of counselling because of the circumstances. They're coming across maybe for a day or 2 days. Whereas the experience in some English cases would be that people are told to go away, think about it. But there isn't abortion on demand, but it is a decision which is taken very seriously by, for instance, the two doctors and the women who have to make up that choice. So I think that we can only have the kind of counselling pointing out the fact that the abortion will itself be traumatic, on the other hand, pointing out the difficulties of going through the pregnancy, which will enable us to say of a society, it is allowing people to make an informed choice.
Father Brian McKevitt, it seems from a report in today's Observer newspaper that clerical sources close to the hierarchy tell journalists that the bishops now believe that it was not necessary to follow the extreme position adopted in the High Court by Judge Declan Costello.
I don't know anything about the legal technicalities of the case, but I just find it interesting that Inez and indeed Professor Lee mentioned that abortion is a traumatic experience for women, and then it's glossed over. And the depth of the trauma, again, this is the problem, that the depth of the trauma and the duration of the trauma is completely ignored, because we are having people coming to us who are suffering as sterility as a result of an abortion. We're having people who are coming to us 15, 20 years after an abortion and are still suffering. Now, women hurt by abortion, it has 15 centres here in Ireland, but also has 6 centres in England. And so we are dealing with people in England, with women in England, who have no particular religious faith. And yet some of them, again, it's 15, 20 years afterwards, that their lives have been devastated by the abortion of their children throughout that time. And that all of this has been virtually ignored by society. Now, that is a big problem for us. And with regard to the abortion of a child conceived through rape, what we're really saying is, if we say that it's all right, that it's not all right to abort other children, but that it's all right to abort a child conceived through rape, then we're saying that this child is less precious, less valuable than other children, that it has not got a right to life. And the reason it has not got a right to life is because its mother is a rape victim. And so what we end up doing is further stigmatizing the victims of rape by saying that their children are less precious and less valuable. And I do not think that that is of any benefit to women in any kind of a society.
Well, if we get a response from Inez McCormick.
I think the one thing that Father McKevitt and I will agree on today, not very much, is that we do not want issues glossed over. I want this issue out in the open in Irish society. I no longer want young women going to on a train or boat to Britain because we want the problem exported rather than deal with it. I want the issue of sexuality out of the table. I want the issue of right to abortion, the right to sex education, the right to provision of contraception. I want Irish society, North and South, to treat each other as adults, to treat women as adults. And I agree with Simon, this is a traumatic issue. But it's a matter of informed choice, it's a matter of informed rights. That child, those women who go perennially on that boat to England, are denied rights as citizens of Ireland to be treated as adults with a right to make a decision. If it was my daughter today, I wouldn't want to impose my view on her. I'd want her to have a right to make a decision together with professional counselling on all options. That's civilised.
A final point from Simon Lee there.
Again, right. I never want to gloss over the trauma of having the abortion, but equally one mustn't gloss over the trauma of this girl who's described by the clinical psychologist as suicidal. Yes. It's in those circumstances that in Northern Ireland, although the law is much more restrictive than in England, she would be entitled to have a lawful abortion. And the final thing I'd like to say, one of the things the judge assumed was that if he didn't give an injunction, it was inevitable the abortion would go ahead. Sorry. But in fact, what would be inevitable would be that the parents and the child would have to make the decision. In the nearest English case, CVS, the Oxford student abortion case, although the woman won the right to have the abortion, she later decided not to go ahead with it, and the child was born and is being brought up by the father. I think that it's not a case of being anti-life, if you like, to say that what one wants is a legal system which allows people to take an informed choice according to their conscience.
But what we are saying here about women having the right to make this choice, that in a sense is a way of washing our own hands of any responsibility for the choice that the woman may make. It's also freeing men from any responsibility, because if a man has not got a responsibility for his unborn child, if he has not got a right to protect his unborn child, then it is difficult to see how society can demand that he would have responsibility for his born child. or a right to protect his born child. And so it's, to my mind, this type of counselling where we are saying to the woman, well, you make the decision and you can live with the trauma and you can live with the responsibility for the death of your child. That is the
Father
way,
McKevitt,
the Pontius Pilate
Father
way
McKevitt,
of dealing with the thing.
Your view of society hasn't worked. Why not give ours a chance?
Your view of society, I think, is tearing America and Britain to, it's really the end of a civilization. That kind of a view where we say that it is legitimate and past legal.
Father Brian, if I could just say finally that I think we want to judge the morality of a society by the choices people make within some kind of framework, not by the statute book, which is the real way of washing our hands.
Well, I'm afraid there we must leave the debate.